It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Dave and Dejanovic, a new conversation.
All right, here we go.
On KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Dave just said, do not look at the stock market. Don't look at the stock market. And of course, what did I do? I immediately Googled the stock market. It's up 600 points.
No, you cannot look at it.
It's up 600 points.
I know. You don't want to look at it. Because it is a roller coaster. And it's just going to give you heartburn because you're happy one day and then you're devastated the next. You're looking at your 401k. You're calling your financial planner. They don't want to hear from you right now, Debbie. They want you to take a break.
It's part of our discussion today in the show is the wild ride in the stock market and why Dave is partially to blame. I will explain that in a moment. Yes.
It's 9:06. It's time for the launch.
Sequence engaged.
And here are three things that Debbie wants you to know, and they're not all stock market related.
Countdown three.
But this one is. Brace yourselves for another wild week on the stock market. That's right. We're going to watch for more earnings reports from stores you love to shop at. At 10:35, Dave, I want to sum up last week's massive sell-off, that big drop in your 401k in two words. Those two words are Walmart and Target. What went wrong with their earnings reports and why your shopping habits are partly to blame, Dave? I have figured out why you are partly to blame for the wild ride on the stock market. You have altered your shopping habits.
I typically want to deflect any criticism you direct at me. You're kind of right here.
Really?
I'm not buying anything right now. I think it's gasoline and milk. That's about it. I even went like duck egg hunting because chicken eggs were too expensive this weekend. Oh, so I got a buddy that had some ducks. We went duck egg hunting.
You've lost your mind.
So how about you? I mean, I know you're not buying name brands either.
I'm too cheap.
Countdown two.
It seems just too cold outside for a wildfire. We've had just it feels like an unusually cold May. But we have a wildfire burning east of Salt Lake City. It broke out yesterday. And so Dave wants to know what this means for the summer's wildfire season. And what happens when the reservoirs run super, super, super low on water? How will those helicopter bucket drops look?
That is in my brain. Because normally you just see them just dipping that big old bucket time and time again into that, that empty reservoir? Does that make it difficult? How do you conserve water when you're trying to fight wildfires?
Launch countdown one.
Our top story this morning, I did the math. It is a 23-hour drive from Indianapolis to Salt Lake City, a 3-hour and 12-minute flight from Indianapolis to Salt Lake City. So I really hope they're delivering Utah's cache of baby formula by plane and not by semi-truck. We're asking, when will it first shipments arrive in Utah and get into the mouths of Utah infants who've been entangled in a massive nationwide shortage of infant formula, Dave?
Do you find it a little bit funny that we flew over C-17 military planes to go pick up this baby formula? Like, we couldn't just order it by FedEx? Like, only the C-17 military plane can bring over... I mean, it just feels like a big show. Hey, look what we're doing. We're fixing everything. Really? Because it would have been nice to just be able to order it online and let FedEx ship it to me just kind of normal.
Commence.
KSL's top national story, special coverage with Dave and Dujanovic.
Apparently, Dave doesn't use Amazon. He just orders things via FedEx. Okay, we're going to dive into what we know about the formula or the foreign baby formula shipments that have arrived in Indianapolis. We're asking the question all morning long. When will it get to Utah? We want this information right now on behalf of parents who've been waiting to feed their hungry babies. We do know that dozens of pallets arrived in Indiana. It went there, Dave, in the C-17 because, first of all, there were no commercial flights from overseas available to fly all this formula in. And there's a baby formula hub in Indianapolis. Who knew?
Well, maybe not on Monday. Like, I mean, this isn't like a brand new problem we've been having. We've had an issue with baby formula for months now. We knew about it in February, but you're right. Okay, maybe on Monday morning we didn't have enough big planes to make the shipments. But I do wonder, and am a little bit worried about this being a Band-Aid, mm-hmm. an itty-bitty Band-Aid to fix a big problem. 75,000 pounds of baby formula sounds like a lot until you're talking about millions of babies.
Right. So we do know that more is on the way this week to the D.C. area. But for now, we know that it's the pallets of the hypoallergenic mixes of Nestle and Gerber Good Start. If you're a new mama or new daddy, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So it lands in Indianapolis via C-17. Like Dave says, it's the big show. This big belly of the plane filled with baby formula. And then it was trucked to an inspection center to make sure it's okay to deliver. I'm like, at this point, we just get it out to parents, right?
Yeah, we'll take the chance.
Okay, so I looked up, Dave, because you're worried about this it being an itty-bitty teeny little Band-Aid, you know, like the round ones that are the size of the dime, you know? They did get
78.
The Indy Star newspaper reports 78,000 pounds of formula flew in. I guess there are people there, like people from Indianapolis actually watching this plane land, like, ooh, ah. It's enough to feed 9,000 babies and 18,000 toddlers for 1 week.
Wow. I mean, really, right? Exactly what I was saying. 78,000 pounds, look what we're doing.
Not good enough for you?
We're so good at fixing problems. How many babies do you think there are in America? I don't know what that number is. I know it's not 9,000.
There was like more than 3 million babies born in the United States in 2020.
Is that more than 9,000?
So this seems like the proverbial drop in the ocean.
Debbie, we are talking about it. We got suckered into this story. We are talking about it. We're talking about it for 30 minutes. We're like, pallets and pallets of baby formula that will feed maybe 1% of the babies out there?
Moms and dads, I'm frustrated on behalf of y'all. I just don't know when this is going to make it to Utah yet, but rest assured we are trying to very, very diligently to track down that answer today behind the scenes as our reporters and producers are asking the questions while we're on air. We don't know for sure when it will arrive in Utah. If it's trucked, it could take a few days. It's like a 23-hour drive, and I think that's just like in a regular car, like a smart car. That's not in a semi-truck. Flown, it would be a little over 3 hours. We do know that it will not hit store shelves, at least not this first run. The health department telling us this morning when we emailed them, the Utah Health Department, it'll go to hospitals, doctors, offices, home health care facilities, in pharmacies where the need is the greatest across Utah. That's what we know so far.
And one of the keys is this is the hypoallergenic stuff. So this is for babies that have sensitive stomachs. And I think that right there, it narrows it down because a lot of parents are, well, fine, just give me any formula, my kid will be fine. But for the parents that have kids with allergies, mm-hmm. this is a really big deal. And again, as you said, this isn't going to end up on the Walmart shelves. This isn't going to end up in Smith's. This is going to end up in the doctor's offices.
We also know that major plant shutdown that happened several months ago, shut down by the federal government because they had some issues that needed to be addressed with the infant formula. I read this morning that plant could be up and running in the next 2 weeks, that they're working. Abbott is working, the manufacturer, working with the FDA to make sure it reaches, you know, an agreement with the Food and Drug Administration. But experts say 2 weeks, it'll be months before the baby formula supply is, you know, plentiful on store shelves.
I'm not sure we have that long.
Oh, my goodness. What do you...
I mean, how many parents have like a 3 month supply of baby formula just sitting in their pantry?
So this begs the question, what is the holdup? Dave and I are going to spend the next 10 minutes cutting through the red tape in D.C. over baby formula.
Dave and Dujanovic.
You can catch info anywhere.
But KSL News Radio is a dependable source.
We invite you to join us weekdays between 5 and 9.
Tim Hughes and Amanda Dixon.
Utah's morning companions for news.
Dave and Dujanovic. KSL's top national story, special coverage with Dave and Dujanovic.
So we're diving into the bureaucracy, the D.C. red tape over the baby formula shortage. We know the shipment of foreign formula just arrived via C-17, a military aircraft with a big belly full of baby formula from Germany to Indianapolis.
America to the rescue. I think we owe a great debt of gratitude to the government for the crisis that it most likely created. As you said, military planes, go pick up the baby formula. We're gonna protect the children, all 9,000 of them, because that's how much this huge shipment, quote-unquote huge shipment of baby formula will take care of. About 9,000 toddlers. I mean, this is... it's 27,000 total. I don't know. I mean, it's just not a massive, game-changing amount of formula, folks.
So let's dive into this, Dave, with Kelly Pierce, a producer here at KSL News Radio, Boyd Matheson's Inside Sources. She has been tracking this very closely. She's a mom herself who at one point needed specialty baby formula. So she's very, very close to the situation. So let's talk about the danger of forcing the Made in America policy.
Yeah.
And let's start here. First of all, like, get your head wrapped around this. The amount of baby formula produced by Abbott Laboratories, exclusively by Abbott, is astonishing. It's astonishing. They provide 42%. 42%. That's almost half of U.S. baby formula. One laboratory.
I am so shocked. I had no idea, obviously. Like, who tracks who produces the baby formula, right? If one company produces 42% of anything, that's a monopoly. And we know that monopolies are bad on many, many levels, right? Because again, if this one Abbott Laboratories has to shut down, if this it's devastating. It's devastating. How do you make up for that?
So the Wall Street Journal writes this editorial, the editorial board writes this op-ed on how this obsession with keeping baby formula made in America has produced a crisis. And when you say 42% of the baby formula is made by this one company and their plant gets shut down because of issues in Michigan, you can see why this turns into a crisis,
now,
a shortfall.
Absolutely. I don't want to call it the Joe Biden baby formula shortage, right? Because that's what we do. It's Putin's price hike. It's the gas hike, whatever it is. So I don't want to label that. But I think we do need to look at this. And President Biden has been very, very open. And I think it was in the State of the Union where he said this. And he was talking about buying American. Let me play this for you.
Here's what we're going to do. We're going to buy American. Every tax dollar that we, in fact, get for construction of anything is going to go to be used to buy American products made in America that create American jobs. That's the way it should be.
Now, that sounds amazing. You know, and it feels good when he says that. I'm like, I agree. I want to buy American. But again, we don't have a real understanding of how this global market works then, right? Because it can't all come from America. We cannot produce enough to take care of everyone's needs. So I don't know. I was just fascinated when I heard the 42% is produced just by one lab.
Okay, let's just say for a moment, made in America. What's the red tape? What's the bureaucracy look like back in D.C. That keeps us from being able to supplement baby formula or other products, specifically baby formula,
right,
when a major plant shuts down or goes offline? Wall Street Journal mentions tariffs at nearly 20% on outside baby formula shipped in. Kelly Pierce, at KSL News Radio producer, our baby formula specialist, your research shows the same thing as the Wall Street Journal op-ed says. There's huge tariffs on shipping and baby formula from out of this country.
Right. It's just bureaucracy. It has nothing to do with the health and safety of babies. There are babies, tons of babies, who are able to safely use European formula and formula from other countries, my son included. And it seems like there's just regulatory barrier, and it really has nothing to do, again, with safety. It has to do with bureaucracy. I mean, literally, the differences in some of these formulas is just because the FDA doesn't like the label.
There's an arrogance by saying, you know what, we have these high standards, these unbelievably high standards here in America. Everyone else's baby formula is garbage. We are such a small percentage of the world. Everyone else seems to be feeding their babies just fine, and we're not losing babies left and right. I'd look at it, and I think there's an arrogance to this that I think has really set us back.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's just sort of these forces where, you know, you have the dairy lobby. And again, this is not targeted towards dairy farmers here in Utah. I'm talking about politics. And you also have the pharmaceutical lobby, because Abbott is a pharmaceutical company, and they lobby Congress and they get special privileges put in these bills. And what does that do? That restricts supply. And in normal times, you know, you might not notice it. But in times like this, yeah, you definitely do.
You brought something to our attention as we were coming into this discussion, Kelly, and you said that the situation at the Abbott laboratories, or the situation that led to the shutdown of it by the federal government, was actually discovered in September of last year. So the shutdown doesn't happen till February, and here we are going into June, and this factory is still not open yet.
And it might not be open for a while. So for those of you that don't know, a complaint was originally filed in September. It was received by, I guess, Health and Human Services Secretary Xavier Becerra, based on something, a comment he gave to CNN, I believe. And so they've known about this since September. They've known that this is a serious complaint. This wasn't just some crazy. And then, of course, they found bacteria in February. That's when they shut it down. So they say that the plant's going to be open, but here's the problem. The company has to update its policies, safety policies, and procedures before the FDA will allow it to open, even though the company and the FDA have settled and just said, you know what, we're not going to do any criminal liability.
No finger pointing.
No finger pointing whatsoever.
Still weeks potentially away before we see supply stocked on shelves.
Right, absolutely. And the crazy part is you have perfectly good supply chains and supply from other countries, and we really don't need to be doing this.
Well, and when you look at the foreign countries, Congress just authorized $28 million, I think it was, to the FDA to allow more inspection of foreign plants. And again, more regulation on foreign plants. Is that going to ease this problem?
I am very doubtful, because here's the thing. Throwing money at a problem, fine, but is it really going to make a difference without a change in policy? I mean, if the FDA is going to shut down the amount of formula coming to the United States because they don't like the label, how is that $28 million going to change anything?
Kelly, I know you're tracking the same thing that our producers are tracking, and that is, when does this supply that was flown into Indianapolis arrive in the Salt Lake City area and get distributed to infants' mouths? I mean, that's the bottom line. We want to know when babies are going to start getting the formula.
And we don't know. It could be weeks. And these are babies that are babies don't have an option, right? They don't have an option other than formula. And especially if you have to use specialty formulas, you're really limited.
And these are specialty formulas. There's three specialty formulas that arrived in Indianapolis over the weekend. We are trying to track down that answer as we speak, Dave. When does this stuff get to Utah?
Yeah, Kelly Pierce, thank you so much for joining us. Incredible. I thought about you immediately. I'm reading this Wall Street Journal, this editorial board. I'm like, Kelly's been saying this for weeks. You guys are late to the party. Kelly, thank you. It's been excellent reporting, and really, I think, has shown a light on the problem.
Yeah, thanks, Kel. Certainly eye-opening information you continue to bring to us here at KSL News Radio and our listeners. And we will continue to track this story. We have calls out to the Utah's Department of Agriculture to find out if they know when shipments will arrive, and we will try to get them on the air in the next couple of hours. Straight ahead, the story that Dave really wants to talk about, wildfire season. It's already starting. There's a wildfire burning to the east of us in Wasatch County. So Dave wants to know what it looks like in the months ahead for wildfire season and what happens when we start to run really, 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 really low on water in our reservoirs.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.